Brethren, you're all familiar with this one proverb that says, where there is no vision or revelation, the people perish. But he that keeps the law, happy is he. It appears that these days we have many people have an identity crisis. Many people wonder who they are. Some people don't even know which gender they are anymore. They are so confused. Many people don't know what they actually stand for. Many people have lost their ways, especially when you look to Washington and see that it seems like nobody remembers the Constitution at all. And a lot of people don't really know or understand what their purpose in life is. So this identity crisis seems to affect a lot of people nowadays, not just individuals, organizations, nations, and even the whole world is affected by it. Today I want to talk about reflecting on our identity and developing clarity about our true identity. Unless we have clarity about what our identity is, how can we live into it? Now, first of all, a lot of people identify themselves in many, many different ways. One of them is their heritage, their family tree. And sometimes people ask me questions about that, and I got a book here with our family tree, and there is the first one that's mentioned was born in the year 1475. So it goes way back, but is that really my identity? Is that really important? I always say, whoop-de-doo, what difference does it make anymore, really? I mean, it's part of my identity, but is it an important part of my identity? I have a twin brother, so many people ask me, and we used to play in a brass band together, and so people would ask, are you the one with the trumpet or are you the one with the trombone? So we were identified by what instrument we were playing. Many times we identify ourselves, or people identify themselves through their job or their career, whatever they do. And so that who are you? Well, I'm whatever, an engineer or plumber or whatever they are. Some people very strongly identify themselves with the role they play within their family. Some people say, well, no, I'm not Reinhard, I'm Emily's husband, or something like that, you know. So they identify themselves that way. And many times people identify themselves through a label they may have received in a personality test. And I say, I'm this green, blue, red, whatever. You know, there's all these different type of personality tests. Who has all taken a personality test in their life before? Okay, a few of you. So I've taken one too. And so the temptation is to label ourselves, you know, this is what I am, and then it can become our identity if we are not careful. Sometimes people label themselves based on a label that was put on them when they grew up, by their parents, by their siblings, by their classmates, and so on. Well, they are just being put in a pigeonhole by them, and that's how they identify themselves, and it becomes sort of their label for themselves, and that's how they trap themselves sometimes. Some people identify themselves through their hobby. When I was in boot camp in the military, in the Air Force, one guy who was a glider pilot, just one of the draftees who served there for 15 months, who himself was not a pilot in the Air Force. And I said, I'd love to go to America where I could, you know, it's so much cheaper to fly. And then he said, well, but there everybody does it, so it's not so special. So anyway, that was his kind of strange way of identifying himself, being special because he was a glider pilot. Sometimes people identify themselves with their affiliation with certain organizations. And many times people identify themselves with their nationality. And so if you have several nationalities, like our kids have triple citizenship, some people think that must be confusing. I may have told you this before, but when David was 3 years old, I asked him, are you American? He said, no. Are you Canadian? No. Are you German? No. Well, what are you? I'm David. So, that's sometimes, you know, how we identify ourselves with. But a lot of these identifiers on how we see ourselves have to do with, you know, how we see ourselves and how we think others see us and how we may want to be seen by others. And how we identify ourselves is often based on the past and what has happened to us in the past or our present condition. Now, it is okay, it is fine, it's good to know who you are and what you identify with, but the problem with identifying ourselves sometimes in some of these terms is that it may put unnecessary constraints on us, and that can often keep us from fulfilling our God-given potential and purpose. Just to tell you an example, I learned about a person who was never good in school, and his mother said, "You're so lazy, and you just, I don't know whether you can go to college." So he took an SAT test and scored extremely high. A number, I don't know, it must have been a pretty high number. It was about 1,700. I'm not that familiar with SAT scores, but that was considered a very high number. It was high enough to get him into an Ivy League school. When he came home and told his mom the results, she said, "Are you sure you didn't cheat? Are you sure? There's no way you got a 1,700. He said, "Seriously, I'm totally shocked myself." She said, I don't know how this happened, but I did not cheat. So he got into this prestigious Ivy League school based on that high score, and then he did really well, and then he did really well in his career in a corporation, climbed the ladder and was doing really well. And years later, somebody discovered that they mixed up the test results. And his real test result was 700. Now, just based on a new label that he put him on himself, on a new belief that there was not this ceiling academically for him, he accomplished a lot. And I know Katie Welch has mentioned that before, when she as a teacher has learned that it makes a big difference how you treat people, what expectations you have from your students, right, Katie? And on how they perform. So it makes a huge difference. So the label, if we put the wrong label on ourselves, we can limit ourselves and limit our potential. And that's not only true maybe in the academic or career sense, but also as far as our development as a member of God's church. The ways we identify ourselves is often leads to a big ego. And when I say a big ego, I not only mean pride and arrogance on the one hand, but also a low confidence or false confidence on the other hand. You know, ego can be inflated, or ego can also mean we label ourselves in a very negative way and much, much below what we are capable of. You know, there was a time when I identified myself, because I was given this label and these expectations. A friend of mine, John Miller, you know, he said, he's a German engineer, you know. And I said, And sometimes you think like you have to live up to that expectation, whatever that means, whatever that label means. And so you try to do everything to maintain that label if you're happy with it, at least. But the results can often be the wrong focus. You focus on the wrong things. And that, you get things done and you're very hardworking and all this, but it can also lead to collateral damage. In other words, you're on roughshod over people because you're impatient and excuse yourself with, but at least I get things done. So not having the correct identity or identifying ourselves with some of the labels that I mentioned before can be a problem. But if we shift our identity to that of being a child of God who desires to honor him and does what is good and pleasing in his sight, things can change for us. We start to look at our potential of who we can become. And with that identity, we grow in confidence and humility at the same time. How do we grow in humility? We examine ourselves and our lives, where we are, point A, And then we look at who God wants us to become, point B. And we notice a gap between the two. We're not where we want to be, and that gives us humility. No matter where we are not there yet. There's always room to grow in grace. That means the degree to which we please God in knowledge. That is our understanding. Our true identity, when we say what it says in Philippians 3, verse 20, for our citizenship is in heaven, from which we also eagerly wait for the Savior, the Lord Jesus Christ, that creates a shift in our minds. And I want to talk about a few biblical examples of people who seem to be very clear about their identity, and they were clear about their identity even in the most dire circumstances. The first one, Abraham. Let's turn to Genesis 13. Genesis 13, and the story of Abraham. And you may remember where he was traveling, or he was moving together with his nephew Lot. He inherited Canaan, and so together with his nephew Lot, he went there. Now, he was clearly the senior. I mean, he was the uncle. Lot was the nephew, as we read in Genesis 11, 27. And in verse 6, he says here, now the land was not able to support them both, Abraham and Lot, that they might dwell together, for their possessions were so great that they could not dwell together. And there was strife between the herdsmen of Abraham's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. Then the Canaanites and the Perizzites then dwelt in the land. So Abraham said to Lot, please let there be no strife between you and me and between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brethren. Is not the whole land before you? Please separate from me. If you take the left, then I will go to the right. Or if you go to the right, then I will go to the left. So he could have easily said, well, I'm the senior here. I have the preeminence, so to speak, and I can decide where I'm settling and where you will be settling, Lot. But he said, no, Lot, you do it. You know, it was more about he had the humility. He had an attitude that was pleasing to God, and that was his identity, not the one, oh, I'm the patriarch here and I call the shots. That was not his identity. Now compare that with Rehoboam's arrogance when he became king after his father Solomon. And let's turn there in 1 Kings 12, 1 Kings chapter 12. And it was a very, very different situation. 1 Kings chapter 12. And this is when Rehoboam became king. And he consulted with the counselors of his father, the older, more wiser people, and to see what he should tell the people who asked him in verse 4. The people asked Rehoboam, your father made our yoke heavy. Now, therefore, lighten the burdensome service of your father and his heavy yoke, which he put on us, and we will serve you. So he told them to depart and to come back 3 days later. So the elders, you know, that knew his father Solomon, gave him good advice to say, yes, you know, I will lighten the burden, and because of that, they will be forever grateful to me and serve me. But he didn't listen to them. He had this, not like Abraham, a humble attitude, had probably a proud and arrogant attitude, thinking, I'm the king now, I call the shots. Let's see what my friends are saying to me. And so he was listening to the wrong advice. And he was listening not to the people who told him, you know, be humble, but he was listening to the people who said, well, you can take greater advantage of this. And the question is for us, when we ask ourselves, what should we do in a particular situation? What is our identity? Is our identity the role that we play in a given hierarchy or whatever, the position we have of power? Or is our identity the child of God is trying to please him and be humble about it? Which counsel do we listen to? Wise counsel from people who truly fear God, or those who want to flatter you and tell you to insist on your rights, like a lot of times lawyers do that, and they may mess things up for us if we follow them. An example giving bad advice is in Matthew 16, and that is an advice in Matthew 16, verse 21 through 27. You're all familiar with that as well. Matthew 16 and verses 21 through 27. Let's pick it up here. From that time, Jesus began to show his disciples in verse 21 that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and the chief priests and scribes and be killed and be raised again the third day. Then Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, saying, "Far be it from you, Lord, this shall not happen to you." So he got advice that was not from God, because Jesus Christ turned around and said, but he turned and said to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan. You are an offense to me, for you are not mindful of the things of God, but the things of men." So sometimes people may give us counsel that sounds good to us, sounds comfortable. It sounds like a nice escape from a temptation, but we follow the wrong advice because it's not advice that is from God. In verse 24, then Jesus said to his disciples, "If anyone desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me." Let him deny himself. Let him deny himself basically means his old identity. "For whoever desires to save his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. For what is a man profited if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? For the Son of Man will come in the glory of his Father with his angels, and then he will reward each according to his works." So when we're in a temptation situation, we need to ask ourselves, who do I want to be in this situation? What is my identity? Am I trying to please God, or am I trying to please other people or escape? Another example of somebody who really knew who she was, we read about it in the book of Ruth. In the book of Ruth. And you know the story about Naomi having two sons, living in a far land, having two sons. And then her two sons got married, and both got married to a Moabite woman. And then when the two sons died, the mother, Naomi, wanted to go back to her people, to the Jewish people. And but Ruth, and she told her two daughters-in-law to go back to their people. And in starting verse 12, we read about this in Ruth chapter 1, verse 12. "Turn back, my daughters, go your way, for I'm too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, even if I should have a husband tonight and should also bear sons, would you wait for them till they were grown? Would you restrain yourself from having husbands? No, my daughters, for it grieves me very much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me." Then they lifted up their voices and wept again, and Orpah kissed the mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. And she said, "Look, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law." But Ruth said, "Entreat me not to leave you or to turn back from following after you. For wherever you go, I will go, and wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me and more also, and if anything but death parts you and me." Basically, what she was saying is, I have lost my old identity. I'm saying goodbye to the past. I'm not considering where I came from. No, what I'm looking for is where I'm going to. And I want to be part of your people. And I want to follow your God, the true God of the people of Israel. So that was her new identity. What is our new identity when we come into the faith? Is that what is becoming most important to us? And is that what we are striving to live up to? Another example of somebody who did not stick to his old identity, who was willing to change, who was not happy about how he grew up, how he was born. That's in 1 Chronicles chapter 4. And you probably heard this story again before. 1 Chronicles chapter 4, verses 9 and 10. And it's talking about the story of Jabez. Now, Jabez was more honorable than his brothers, and his mother called his name Jabez, saying, "Because I bore him in pain." That's, and what this word means, this name, Jabez, actually means, "He will cause pain." Talk about a horrible identity, a horrible label to be put on. But he didn't stick to that. He didn't say, "Okay, that's me, that's going to be the rest of my life, I'm going to be a pain." No, he changed. He said, and Jabez called on the God of Israel, saying, "Oh, that you would bless me indeed and enlarge my territory, that your hand would be with me and that you would keep me from evil, that I may not cause pain." I mean, in other words, that I'm not going to stick to the label that they gave me at birth. So God granted him what he requested. So it is possible for us to get rid of old labels, that negative labels that hold us back and that keep us from pleasing God. Another example, biblical example, was Esther. Talk about her identity. Just a second here. Just turn there to the book of Esther. You know the story of Esther when she became the queen of King Ahasuerus. I always struggle with pronouncing that name. But anyway, he was the king of the Medo-Persia. And he was upset with Mordecai, that is the second in command to the king. Haman was very upset with Mordecai because Mordecai, he was the uncle of Esther. He actually would not comply with all the orders that were given by him. And that really irked Haman because he was a very proud man. And he hated the Jews, and he wanted to have them all killed. So what did Esther say? "Well, you know, I'm the king's wife. I'm fine. I'm in a pretty good position. Why should I care what's happening around me? Plus, if I approach the king, I may die, because unless he extends his scepter to me, you know, I will have to die. I will be killed, and then what good will it do?" But in the end, her uncle, Mordecai, he convinced her otherwise. And so she ended up realizing, okay, my identity is that of pleasing God to save his people, help him save or be involved in saving his people. So in verse 4, we hear the encounter or the discourse that's taking place. Mordecai told them to answer Esther when she said, "Well, what do I have to do with this?" She was afraid to die if she did approach the king. So he said, "Do not think in your heart that you will escape in the king's palace any more than all other Jews." So sometimes people try to save themselves, but it backfires on them. It won't work eventually. "For if you remain," he told her, "completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place." So he said, "I trust in God that he will deliver us. It will come from someplace if it doesn't come from you. But you and your father's house will perish." God will not be pleased with not helping your people. "Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this? So have some faith here." Then Esther told them to return this answer to Mordecai. "Go gather all the Jews who are present in Shushan and fast for me, neither eat nor drink for 3 days or night or day. My maids and I will fast likewise, and so I will go to the king, which is against the law, but if I perish, I perish." So that was her attitude. She said, "Okay, I trust in God. No matter what the consequences are, I will just do the right thing." That was her identity. Another example would be Job. Job was a very wealthy man. He was a righteous man. His identity, though, was tied to his relationship with God. His desire to be righteous, to be a righteous man, was his desire was to be a righteous man no matter what happened to him. He was not tied, his identity was not tied to his health, wealth, and prosperity. No, he had the attitude when he lost everything. In Job 13, verse 15, he said, "Though he slay me, yet I will I trust him. Even so, I will defend my own ways before him." So no matter what happened to him, as grave as it was, he lost his family, he lost everything basically, he still maintained that identity. Because he maintained his integrity in very dire circumstances, he did not falter. God took care of him and blessed him. His identity was not tied to an idol, that is his position, his status, or his wealth. Sometimes, you know, these identifiers that we put on ourselves, they can become an idol, and we have to be very careful that they don't. Daniel was another example of somebody who rose to a great position of prominence under the king of Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar. His identity, though, was that of a child of God who had a very personal relationship with God, as expressed in his three prayers every day in public, and he was not shy about it. Even though it was against the law, he did what was right in his eyes, what he sought to be right in the eyes of God. His position and his boss did not become his idol, even though he was literally told to worship an idol. His standing with God was more important to him, was worth more, not only worth more than his position, but it was worth more than his life. He was willing to give up his life a couple of times. One time he was thrown into the fiery furnace, and another time he was thrown into the lion's den. He said, "Well, I still will not worship an idol." And God took care of him because he maintained his integrity. He maintained his proper identity as a child of God. So, what is our identity? Let's turn to Matthew 12, Matthew 12, 46 through 50. Our relationship, basically, it says here, with God is more important even than our family relationships. In verse 46 through 50, we read, "While he was still talking to the multitudes, behold his mother," that was Jesus Christ, "behold his mother and brothers stood outside, seeking to speak with him. Then one said to him, 'Look, your mother and your brothers are standing outside, seeking to speak with you.' But he answered and said to the one who told him, 'Who is my mother and who are my brothers?' And he stretched out his hand toward his disciples and said, 'Here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother.'" So that, he said, was their primary identifier. People who do the will of God, they are the ones who he calls his relatives. In Luke 14, 26, we read, and we need to be a little careful in how we read this, as you know. It says here, "If anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother," that really should say, "does not love," or "loves," "does not love less his father and mother than me, and all his relatives." And yes, even those who don't love less their own life, they cannot be my disciple. So again, the primary identity is to do his will, to be pleasing to him, and to become part of his family. And in Matthew 22, we also read about family relations. In Matthew 22, verse 23 through 33. So there was a dispute among the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And the same day, the Sadducees, in verse 23, who say there is no resurrection, came to him and asked him, saying, "Teacher, Moses said that if a man dies, having no children, his brother shall marry his wife and raise up offspring for his brother. Now there were with us seven brothers. The first died after he had married, and having no offspring, left his wife to his brother. Likewise, the second also, and the third, even to the seventh. And last of all, the woman died also. Therefore, in the resurrection, whose wife of the seven will she be? For they all had her." Jesus answered and said to them, "You are mistaken, not knowing the scriptures, nor the power of God. For in the resurrection, they neither marry nor are given in marriage, but are like angels of God in heaven. But concerning the resurrection of the dead, have you not read what was spoken by God, saying, 'I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. God is not the God of the dead, but of the living.'" So basically he said, it's not all that important what your family relations are. It is very, very important what your relationship is with me, because relations basically die when we die. Now, this should never, ever be used as an excuse to follow a cult leader who tells you to cut off peaceful relationships with family members. Even though the relationship with God is more important, you don't cut your family relations when they are peaceful members of the family. Brethren, we are tested and judged now. So having clarity about our true identity, how we need to show up in the world, is essential for us to make the right choices when confronted with challenging situations. To have clarity in our minds about our true identity is necessary for growing into that identity. The old labels that we put on ourselves can become idols and keep us caged and stuck, and they hold us back from who we are meant to become. To move forward, we need to take two steps. First, we examine ourselves and our lives to determine where we are, and that requires true humility. And then, secondly, we seek understanding of God's purpose for our lives, who we are meant to become, and that gives us the vision on which we can start walking in the right direction. While the world may be in chaos and confusion, we don't have to be. With God's help, we can develop the clarity we need to reach our final destiny, our true identity as members of the family of God.